Welcome to Running on Indy. I'm Jesse Davis.
And I'm Blake Robertson.
On today, we're going to be talking about ultras with Brad Baumgartner and Nick Baalbach. And I got that right, Brad Baumgartner.
That's it.
I just said it like right before we tested it. I feel like I just messed it up. But we got it.
Episode of Running on Indy is brought to you by 361 Degrees Running Shoes with the all-new Meraki 2. Its high-mileage trainer is powered by Quick Foam. So quick, you'll foam at the mouth. Check out the new Meraki 2. It's the Meraki 2. And find out why everyone is switching to Quick Foam. Quick Foam. It's available at your runner's form or your local run specialty store. Get some.
I don't like the die part, but... So you two are have done a lot of ultras, and you're very accomplished in that arena. And we just want to kind of like break... We're going to have you on the show and break down ultras for like the common folk like Blake here, yes, who are afraid of the distance.
It just seems so frightening and painful. And horrible.
Yeah.
it's probably all true about it, which is why you like it.
It's all about perspective, really.
Yeah. You guys want to maybe tell us about some of your accomplishments and some of the races you've done?
Or... And just kind of say your name, too, so the audience will know who's
speaking.
Just
the first time.
So I'll take it. This is Brad. I ran my first marathon in 2013, which was, ironically, it was Boston. So if anybody remembers happened in Boston in 13, I was right between the bombs. So I was like 200 feet from the finish line. So that was my introduction to marathoning.
Jeez.
That was scary.
It was interesting for sure.
Yeah.
So the following weekend, I actually ran in Carmel. That was when Carmel was the week after Boston. So I needed to cross the finish line.
Yeah.
And it really got me interested in marathoning and running, but I had never run anything beyond a marathon until that point. I then ran in Oman, actually, an 80-mile relay, and I watched these guys leave in the morning that were going out to do the solo, and I thought, man, that looks really cool. I wish I could do that. And then I started running longer and longer, and eventually last year completed my first 100 miles. So
wow, awesome. That's awesome. Incredible.
Yeah, so I think I've run 20 odd ultras and a bunch of marathons since 2013. So,
wow. And how long did it take you to run 100 miles?
Forever. Just over 24 hours. So.
Just completing it is insane. Like I still get my head around 100 miles.
I just don't see how you run for 24 hours. That's,
and Nick,
that's crazy.
You've also done a 100-mile race.
Yeah. So
we'll dive into the psychology of the 100-mile race in a second, but you can go ahead and give us your...
So my name's Nick Baalbach, live in Brownsburg. I, like Brad, was running marathons, and it seemed like I was always getting hurt trying to get in two workouts and a long run each week, and started to notice I really enjoyed the long run, being out in Eagle Creek, where I do most of my long runs, in nature. Time really isn't a factor. Just enjoying being out on the trails, and thought, I wonder if I can run 50 miles in one day, or like in one go. So I ran the Owen Putnam State Forest 50-50 and ended up winning, which, don't tell anybody, but there are only 9 people in the race. So
wins a win.
Right. So
you have no control of competition.
Right.
Yeah.
So then the idea became, well, that's cool. I ran 50 miles, but I wonder if I could run 100. And so then the following summer, about 9 months later, I ran the Burning River 100 in Ohio, point to point, and finished, no pacer. And that was back when it was the USATF, like national championship, quote unquote.
Mm-hmm.
And there are all kinds of rules. You can't use earbuds. So
really?
It was interesting. Ended up finishing that, and I thought, you know, that's when the documentary about the Western States came out.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, well, I might as well put my name in the hat. And then they drew my name, and then I had to go. So.
And then just for people that don't know, what are the percentages of getting drawn the first time you enter?
I've actually been fortunate enough to run twice, and both times I had less than a 5% chance of being drawn.
That's incredible. It's like you won the lottery twice.
I don't know that you really win the lottery.
Yeah, you won the lottery to suffer lottery. Yeah.
Okay, so you win a chance to go run 100 miles. Yeah, sounds great. Yeah.
In the mountains.
Sounds more of a punishment.
In California.
Yeah. It is the most prestigious 100-mile race I think there is, and there is like...
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people consider it like the granddaddy of them all, the one where it started the 100-mile race in the United States. Mm-hmm. I still have yet to conquer that one. I finished twice, but I felt like I was way more prepared going in and just didn't figure things out throughout it. So again, I finished twice, but not even close to my goal. But just to be there, be a part of the atmosphere.
Again,
with everybody else.
100 miles, man. That's
the fact
incredible.
That you guys have a goal.
Yeah,
time
other than just to complete.
For 100 miles is mind-blowing. You know, like if I had was forced to do it and my life depended on it, my goal would be, man, I just want to finish.
Yeah.
So the fact you have a goal, that's amazing.
I've done some ultras, and every time that I've gone past 50, it's like the 20-mile threshold in the marathon. Like, you get past 50 and there's just like a change that happens, and it just gets so hard. So like, that's what makes me like, oh man, like 100 miles just sounds terrible.
Well, you get to 50 and you'll be like, oh, I got 50 more to go.
Yeah, and that's usually where you start feeling like crap. Ooh. At least I do. Maybe I need to change something with my training, or I don't know. But just tell us.
The key is to run slower like we do.
Right.
There you go.
Yeah, when you run that fastest. And for the record, Western States started out as a horse race. So
that's right.
Yes.
That's right. If anybody hasn't seen that documentary, check out I forgot the name of it. Do you remember the
Unbreakable?
Name?
Unbreakable?
Yeah.
Something. Is it on Netflix?
I don't remember where it's at, but if you can find it. It is incredible. Basically just started because it was a horse race, and this guy's like, I wonder if a human could do this. And
his name was Gordy Ansley.
Yes.
And the long story is that he bought a horse right before, about a week before, and the person he bought it from said the horse has never gone lame. Well, about 3 miles into the race, the horse refused to move for him. And so he just walked alongside the horse and finished. And then the next year he was like, I wonder if I could finish that on my own without a horse at all. And that's how it was born. So
yeah,
when did all this happen? Like, what year are we talking?
Oh, this is
70s.
70s, yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. You should watch that documentary. It's really good.
Well, I've watched the Berkeley, and that's mind-blowing.
The Barclays?
Barclays at Barclays?
Yeah,
Barclays.
Yeah,
crazy.
Yeah, that one's just insane. That's
are you guys
just like
gonna
survival.
Do that one?
No desire whatsoever.
Yeah, no way. That's just like torture. Yeah, no, we won't get into that. That's like a different kind of thing.
So I guess my question, and either one of you guys can take it, or you know, probably have different takes on it. From what little I know about ultra, I feel like 90% of it is probably nutritional. And having a plan and getting enough calories in so you don't bonk. So kind of talk about that. Maybe I'll talk about your own plans and kind of how you figure that out, because that seems to be would be something that I would struggle in trying to figure out how to do.
Yeah, no, that's actually the probably the biggest learning curve for me. And actually, it was Matt Ebersole who had said somebody had tried to get him into ultramarathoning, and they were trying to convince him that he should, because it's the only sport where you can pass someone convincingly running a 9-minute mile.
Yeah.
And that's when I knew this was for me. I'm like, I'm in. I can do this. But I think that the key to that is sort of just picking your pace that you're comfortable with and holding it as long as you can. The biggest learning curve for me has been nutrition. It's been hydration. It's been I really have to force myself. And for the record, the hundreds are not for me. I wanted to do one because I wanted to check that box. But I really love the 50s and the 100Ks.
50 is a good distance.
To me, those are great. You have to worry a little less about nutrition than you do in 100. I start to struggle with nutrition and hydration at about mile 70 to 75. For me, that's when it's tough to force yourself to get something in. But one thing I have learned is you have to force yourself early and often, because it's not something you can catch up on. And it took a few races the hard way to learn that. I had some struggles late in races because I wasn't forcing myself early on to get liquids in me and get food. So I think that's for me been the sort of the biggest learning curve. But I feel like I've kind of got it dialed in now. And when you do enough of it and you spend as much time as you do doing it, you kind of figure it out.
Yeah. What about you, Nick?
Yeah, I would argue that probably 90% of it is mental when you're talking about a 100-mile race.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But the next biggest part is the nutrition and hydration.
Which can be mental too, because you got to psych yourself into taking food sometimes.
Yes. What looks good at mile 10 is probably not going to look good at mile 70. And
now, how come? Because I feel your
stomach goes, man.
Won't get to eat, right? Because you're burning all these calories, right?
You would think that, but the more dehydrated you get, the less you want to eat.
Yeah.
Which it sounds weird, but the more of what you need, the less desire you have to eat that.
Well, and just taste, because you're eating the same things for 10, 12, 14 hours.
Yeah.
So I brush my teeth,
like,
right?
Repulsive.
But you learn little tricks. Like you brush your teeth 8 hours in and then stuff kind of starts to
really taste
new a little bit, right?
I've never heard that.
Yeah.
Really?
Cool. Sorry.
Yeah. No, I mean, but to his point, you know, I always go into a race with a plan. I'm going to take a goo every 30 to 40 minutes. I'm going to drink, you know, 8-10 ounces of water every 30 minutes. I'm going to take a salt tablet every hour and 15 minutes, whatever, you know, depending on the weather. The beautiful thing about the ultra, and especially the 100-mile race, is no race is ever going to be the same. Each race, you're going to need something different, and you're going to have to be able to adapt and figure out what your body needs and be able to make your body basically accept what you're putting into it. I ran Hellgate 100K, and it starts at midnight, and it's through the mountains of West Virginia, like right on the West Virginia border. And it starts at midnight, it's freezing. And I think I survived the last 20 miles of that 65-ish mile race on Coke and Hershey's with almonds.
Yeah.
Like the little fun size bars. Like you just get to a point where you can't stomach the goos anymore.
Yeah.
Water is.
I've done really well with flat soda towards the end. I start liking that a lot.
Yeah. Honestly, at some point in some races, you just ditch the water bottle. You carry the water bottle, but you ditch the water and you put Coke in there.
Yeah.
And you shake it up and it gets.
Works really well.
Right.
Yeah, like the goos are great early on, but if you keep taking them, man, your stomach just turns on it. It's like, nope.
Yep. They just taste awful.
Yeah, and pretzels. I've done well with Coke and pretzels late in the race.
Pretzels, Ruffles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, I've actually gone away from all the sugars early, like the goos, and I've tried to do whole foods and not switch to those until as late as possible, because then you come down with a bit of a sugar high, for me anyway. So, like wraps with Nutella in them and things that are just a little bit more natural.
Yeah.
Just because then I don't get that late race crash from the sugars early.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know I did some reading on, and probably all know him. I actually met him before, but Dean Karnazes. And then we had Camille on the show. I'm sure you know who Camille Herring is.
Mm-hmm.
Camille on the show a couple of shows back. And the common thing for them was Camille would eat Taco Bell. And I know Dean Karnazes said that he would order a pizza and eat a pizza during his his long training run. So is that something that you guys do too? Or is that not good or what?
It may not be a nutritionist recommendation, but I actually got to run with Dean in the North Face Endurance Challenge and listen to him and talk to him a little bit. And not only did he order a pizza, but he lives in Northern California. He would leave the house and he'd go for a run in the morning, and he'd come back like a day later, right? He'd tell his wife he's going out, and he'd run up to Napa or something and back. It's crazy. From the Marin Headlands, he would stop and call and order a pizza. Like he'd say, I'm on the corner of 104th and whatever street, and they would just deliver it, and he'd be sitting there because he's running. So it wasn't just that he'd eat a pizza, but he'd randomly call these places to deliver it en route as he's sitting on a corner. But
that's crazy.
That's funny.
At certain points, I'll eat like anything that they put in front of me.
yeah, I get that way too. And now for our second plug, this show is brought to you by 361 Degrees Running Shoes. And I am currently wearing a trail shoe just because the theme of this show is ultra marathon and there's a lot of trail talk here. It's the, I'm gonna butcher the name, it's the Yusham. Oh. It's very bright and it's got lots of grip. And I'm looking forward to getting on some trails eventually and trying it out.
I wish you'd have told me that you were wearing your trail shoes, because I do have some 361 trail shoes.
Yeah.
And I could have wore mine and I could have talked about them. But I don't know the name of them, but I know I have a
pair. In general, I don't like to match with you, so this is like, it was planned.
Well, I do not have trail shoes on. I have the Spin Jets.
Yeah.
So those are running shoes.
I have the same ones. Those are great.
Yeah. Trail shoes are also running shoes.
These are trail shoes. I'm going to use them.
These are non-trail shoes.
I'm going to use them at first for hiking because we're going to, after grandma's, we're going to go backpacking.
But this morning, guys, I ran at Eagle Creek in the trails. I never do that. So nice. that I guess I'm a trail runner now, right? Because I never run the trails at Eagle Creek.
Yeah,
I normally run around the roads.
I'm not sure why anyone would go to Eagle Creek and run the roads, but
this leads to a question, actually. Like, how do you, speaking of Eagle Creek, how do you train for some of these things like Western states in the Midwest where we don't have altitude and we don't have like the technical trails? How does that work? How can you really simulate that?
I don't know that you really simulate it other than just prepare yourself mentally for climbing and climbing and climbing up mountains, basically. One of my favorite workouts leading up to Western States was to go to actually Eagle's Crest, which is on the west side of the Eagle Creek Reservoir. And I found the biggest hill there, and I would start at the bottom and I'd run up, take about early in the run, about a minute to get up to the top, about a minute 10 to get back down, you know, and you're pushing the pace up the hill, you're jogging back down for recovery. And, you know, I would start 6 months out. I would do that for about 30 minutes, get about, I don't know, 15 hills in or so. And about a month out from Western States, I spent about 90 minutes on the same hill, just going up and down and up and down.
I think I know exactly what hill you're talking about.
It's the one from the creek where there's like a big center pole by a bridge. It's up the, it's like a service road up to a building.
Yep.
You just go all the way up, turn around, come all the way down.
Yeah.
And it's kind of steady, gradual for about the first 2/3, and then the last third is pretty steep.
Mm-hmm.
But it's mind-numbing, but that's kind of what you need when you're going to the mountains to race. Yeah. I don't know what you...
So I've got a race late August in France, the Ultra Trail Mont Blanc, and it's got 20,000 feet of gain, so it's a lot.
You say in France?
Yeah, yeah. It starts in Italy, goes up into Switzerland, then finishes in France.
Yeah, it's a big deal.
Cool.
So I'm doing... So the way I'm going to get ready for that is Squaw Peak 50 mile in Provo, Utah in about 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks. And then I'll be back in Utah to run the Speed Goat 50K, which are two of the tougher elevation challenges here in the States. So fortunate to be able to go get some real climbs in between now and then. But
that's awesome. Yeah.
So when you guys run trails, these 100-mile trails, 50-mile trails, when you guys do that, even road, but I guess more so with the trails, how do you not get lost? I mean, that scares the crap out of me.
Unlike Jesse, we're not the first one in the pack. We have people to follow.
At night, so like you got to have a headlamp, obviously. Yeah. So like, how do you know where to go?
People do get lost. I mean, it's happened to me in a 50-miler Lookout Mountain. I got lost and ended up making it a 60-miler. So
they're usually marked pretty well. I mean, they usually the pre-race instructions, there's usually a lot of flags and a lot of markings. But late in the race, I mean, look at what Walmsley did at Western States, right?
Yep,
wrong
miles.
Turn. And so it happens even to the best of them. But
yeah.
And for the most part, they're marked really well.
Yeah, that was early into one of my first ultras, and I didn't even look at the map at all before the race. I think I would have probably not got lost.
I don't even know that looking at the map, at least for me, even helps. It's more just trying to stay mentally aware of where the flags are, where the streamers are tied in the tree.
If there's a
big intersection of trails, they typically have it pretty well marked.
Yeah.
Now the one at night, I was mindlessly following someone. We were deep in conversation, as I'm sure you can attest that you get into. And all of a sudden he's like, "Hey, have you seen a flag lately?" And I'm like, "No." And he's like, "Neither have I." And then we just kind of stop and look around, and it's 2 a.m. and we have no idea where we're at.
Most races have what they refer to as confidence markers. So when you're at a point where you do take a turn of some sort within 50 to 100 feet, they're supposed to have another flag that you see to know that you've made the right turn. If you don't see that confidence marker, you're served well to go back and just be sure you went the right way.
Yeah. And you kind of almost touched on my next question. You were talking about running with another runner. I know the ultra community, one of the cool things about doing these races is you meet people out on the course, and you can strike up a conversation, because it's not like you're out there for a long time. So it's not like a lot of back and forth, gritty nose racing. You're kind of almost racing yourself. And like, can you talk about the camaraderie that kind of can built up during a race? And
yeah, I think as opposed to racing each other like you would have in a road marathon, I think out on an ultra marathon, you're all racing together to beat yourselves, I guess, or to beat, you know, the demons that are inside that are saying, no, you can't finish that. And you're all out there for the common goal of finishing.
The vibe is totally different than a road race.
It's completely different.
And I think that's why
whatever I have, if someone need, you know, if I have salt tablets and someone's out of it, I'm sharing. If I have Advil or Aleve or whatever someone else needs, in that, you know, I'm gladly giving it to them. You know, you never pass someone and try to like bury them like you would in a 5K race or a 10K on the track. You pass them and say, "Everything going all right? You doing okay?"
Yeah.
Like, anything you need? And typically the answer is, "Yeah, I'm good," or, you know, and it, you truly get a sense of community and that feeling of we're all in this together.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's it. When you finish a race, and this is not a criticism of road racing by any means, but there's a difference. When you finish a road race, I think people's first question is, you know, what was your time? Did you do what you, where did you place? At the end of a 50-mile run, usually the first question is, do you want to have a beer? But after that, it's, you know, did you have a good day on the trail? How was it?
Yeah.
The answer is always yes.
Yeah. It's a little bit different mindset, which I find kind of just more relaxing.
And yeah. One of the coolest things that really brought this to my attention is I did the JFK 50-miler, and I was really starting to struggle after about 27 miles. And I was, I got to like, there was an aid station at around 34 miles or something. And I was like questioning, like, maybe I should just stop. I started walking, people started passing me. And then Michael Wardian, who is he's a really well-known ultra marathoner.
Stud.
Yeah, he's a great guy. He came up from behind me and he's like asking me how I was doing. Like, I was like, "Yeah, I don't know, man, it might not be my day." And he's like, "Yeah, I'm not feeling great either, but you know, who knows, it may turn around." And I was just like, you know what? I was about ready to stop. I was about ready to turn around and go back to that last aid station and just drop out. And I was like, you know what? It might just turn around. You know, that was great advice. And he like ran with me for a little bit. And then eventually I was in such bad shape. I was just slowing him down. I was like, "You can just go, man." He was a really cool dude. And I thought that was just awesome about the community and the camaraderie you get with ultramarathoning. It's just like you're all out there trying to achieve this thing together and not just like back and forth, like nitty gritty. Like, it's just different, you know?
But to his point, you know, one of the phrases, I have several phrases I keep in my mind during a 100-mile race. And one of the phrases I always go back to is, it never always gets worse. So like,
That's kinda true.
It's a double. You know, it's like, what did you say?
Maybe
but,
it's just
but if you really think about it, and then when you're in that mental state of like, wait, what am I? What? But it never always gets worse, meaning it's going to get better.
Yeah.
You just have to figure out the nutrition part. And I think that's part of the fun of a 100-mile race is the shit's going to hit the fan at some point. And are you able and capable to figure out what you need or how to come out of those lows to be able to persevere through the rest of the race?
Yeah, that's totally true. Yeah.
I think, and I don't know if this is a problem with ultra running, but I think one thing I would probably struggle with, definitely the mental aspect of it, but when you're out there, whether it's a trail, whether it's a road, and you're by yourself, and there's nobody around you, you're in that no man's land that could go on for the next 20 miles. Like, how do you mentally prepare yourself to be, especially in a trail, you're alone, you're not sure about if you're going the right way. I mean, all these things probably pop up in your mind. Like, how do you prepare for that? Both of you, how do you guys prepare for that?
Maybe we differ in this, but you've like just described my utopia.
just being all by yourself in the woods.
I work a fairly high stress job. And for me, I don't listen to music. I don't when I'm out running. Either.
No offense, anybody listens to music.
Yeah, no. It's just my choice, right? So for me, the part of the attraction of this is being out alone, not having any connection to the rest of the world, being on a trail. And if I get lost, maybe it wasn't my day. But that to me is the beauty of the sport is that you're just sort of out there. Running.
Okay. Yeah. It's totally Fair different enough. Vibe than running roads for sure.
And for me, really, it's about, in those times, let's say between mile 70 and 80, where you're like, why the hell am I doing this? Like, I could be at home right now. Like, why in bed, middle of the night, you're by yourself. But then you go back to, well, I'm doing it for those that I can't, maybe, you know what I mean? Or those whose lives have been cut short or something. And you just start thinking about all the people you've lost. And it's like, well, maybe they'd be out running if they were here. If I can take one more step forward, I'm going to, because I signed up for this.
Yeah.
And also the idea of, I like the look on people's faces when I'm like, yeah, I've run a 100-mile race.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, how many days? I'm like, no, in less than one.
Yeah.
And they're like, I guess, I don't, maybe that's
I think it's
sadistic
cool. Yeah.
To think like, I like to see them be in like awe. I don't know.
But yeah, I'm in awe.
One of those where it's like, yeah, I want that reaction.
Yeah.
You know, it's crazy. I get that same reaction for a 5K.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
I am going to say one thing. I'd be one of those that you'd be thinking about is gone.
Right.
This is Blake's dad.
That's my dad.
He's popping in.
The best thing about Cipollone's story is regular people. You'll run a 5K, right? And they'll see you out there running a 5K and they finish. They're like, how far was the marathon? How was your marathon? And I was like, okay, it's a 5K.
Right. Yeah. One of the cruelest things that ever happened to me in a ultra marathon is I was running 100K and it was a looped 10K course into 10 times. And somebody was like towards the end grilling like some brats or something, and I was just like starving, and then like they smelled so good. And I got to the end of the race and I thought they were like be for sale or something, and like I turned to Matt because he was there, and I was like, Matt, I don't care what it costs, I need one of those brats. And he was like, he went and checked, and it was just somebody cooking out right next to the finish line. And then they just up and left, and there was no brats. And I was like, give me any kind of food, I'm so hungry. But yeah, like I can't even imagine, like I said, when I crossed that 50 mile, every time I've gone over 50, like the last part of that race is just awful. And I've done 78. And that's the most I've ever done. It was a 12-hour race. And those last 28 miles were torture.
So how much weight do you guys lose at the end of a race?
Yeah, have you ever
like
weighed yourself for that?
Yeah, I mean.
That's one of the way Matt, you know, taught the hydration, right, is weigh yourself before you run a race pace and then after. You know, one of the nice things about trail running is I don't have to be built like the two of you to actually be okay at it.
Yeah.
I mean, you actually see very few guys that are you know, don't have a little bit of...
Yeah, it's not necessarily an advantage to be light on the trails, for sure.
Yeah, it's not. I think maybe, I don't know, leg strength, other attributes maybe. Because if you look at the typical trail runner, they're not the same profile as a really fast marathoner, right?
Yep.
So I definitely have an advantage there. I have a little more to give away during a race. But I, you know, for me during a 50, I can lose 5-6 pounds if I'm hitting it pretty hard and it's hot, which
yeah,
fair amount of weight in 8 hours.
Yeah. Have you ever weighed yourself?
Well, similar to that, at Western States, they actually used to weigh you the day before.
That's right. They don't do that anymore, but
you put a wristband on and they wrote your weight with a Sharpie. And if you were below 10% of your body weight, they would actually hold you in the aid station until you gained that body weight back, either through fluids or food. You know, I think it's more about just monitoring your fluid intake and knowing that you're not getting close to that danger zone.
But if they classified you like in wrestling, I think I could be pretty competitive in the heavyweight class.
Right.
No, you know, you're right. I've noticed that. Like, if you look at guys like Dean Karnazes, like, they're your bigger, you know, broader, you know, type dudes. And you rarely, I think Jim Walmsley's pretty small, though. But
no, he's not.
He's not? Okay.
He's not that. I think he's...
Oh, he's pretty thin.
Is he?
Oh, yeah.
He looks tall. Though, I mean, he may not be...
He's a complete anomaly, though. I mean, the guy just ran a 54-minute half marathon.
Yeah, like he's crazy.
Yeah.
Right.
He would be like a 2... I bet he'd be like a 212, 213 marathoner.
Yeah.
He's good.
But my point is, like, you're right.
He just set the world record for the 50-mile
don't
race.
Seem to do it.
Yeah, I know. I saw that. Yeah. He's incredible.
Yeah.
But...
Okay, well, Jim Walmsley, he's skinny. But you're right. Generally, that's not the case. You're exactly right.
Yeah, yeah.
I agree with that.
I'm trying to think of the former Butler runner. He's
Carr,
one
with... Rob Carr.
Yeah. Yeah, he's kind of a bigger dude. And he's won Western States, like... 3 or 4 times, maybe?
He's really solid. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, there's a lot of good examples of that. But, so if someone is wanting to take on, like, an ultra marathon, what would be, like, someone that just wants to get into it, what would be a tip you'd give them? Like, they've maybe done, like, hopefully at least a marathon before, and now they're wanting to take on ultra marathoning.
Yeah, I mean, from my perspective,
do you go straight to 100, or do you just start smaller?
I actually failed miserably in my first 200s. Like, I got to 50 the first one, and then 72 the second, and didn't finish either of them. So it took me a little while to figure out the 100. If it was me, my first one was going from a marathon to, I don't know if it's right or wrong, but to a 50K, just to get over the marathon distance and say that I had done it. If I were to give anybody a tip, if you can run a marathon, you can easily run a 50K. You just need to pick the right pace and not go out too hard early. But if you pick the right pace, I'm 100% convinced you can run as far as you want if you pick the right pace.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think once you get beyond the marathon and 50K, it becomes more about mental approach and mental toughness. And like we said, getting the nutrition right. You know, your legs aren't just going to all of a sudden not work for you.
Yeah.
Unless you're not hitting the nutrition right.
Yeah.
There are cases where you'll tie up. At Western States, about mile 55, I wasn't getting enough salt, and I got halfway up Devil's Thumb, and my hamstrings were cramping. So I just had to stand. Like, there was no climbing. Mm-hmm. There was no sitting down. It was just stand. Popped a couple salt tablets. And I basically had to wait about 5 minutes until those salt tablets got into the system. And then all of a sudden the hamstrings like let loose and was able to climb again. But
nice.
It's about the mental approach to it.
And you gotta be,
I wouldn't go straight from a marathon to a 100-mile race.
Yeah. I wasn't advocating that at all. I was just trying to get you guys to say that.
So let's say, in a marathon training, you'll do, you know, you'll do your long run, and it'll be pretty close to a marathon, 20, 22, maybe 24, maybe, but generally between 20 to 22 miles is what you do. Now, how close do you get to the 50 and even 100.
That's a good question, yeah.
To mentally like, okay, I'm ready to go.
Yeah, so for me, I suspect everybody's a little bit different, but it's been more back-to-back and time on my feet. So yeah. During a week, like recently, it's been 60 to 90-minute weekday runs with some hills thrown in, a little bit of speed work. Then like this weekend, I've got back-to-back four-hour runs. So Saturday, I'll do 4 hours, no more than 25 miles. So it'll be trail slow. And then I'll do the same thing on Sunday. So more back-to-back. Than necessarily mileage and just time on feet and getting used to that for me anyway.
Okay.
Yeah, I very similar. Obviously, you build up throughout your training cycle. Start with back-to-back 2 hours, and then you go up to 2.5, 2.5, 2, 3, 2, 3.5, 2.5, eventually getting up to, I think the highest I ever got was 4 hours and 3 hours back-to-back. But one of my favorite workouts to kind of simulate what it's like to persevere through tired legs and tired mind is I would on a Friday night from 9 p.m. to midnight, I'll run for 3 hours. Didn't care how far I made it, just that I was running.
Mm-hmm.
And then get home, eat, shower, sleep for about 5 hours, and then get up and go from 6 to 9 a.m. for 3 hours, didn't care how fast, how far, but you're running in a 12-hour span, you're running 6 of those hours.
Yeah.
And that the Saturday morning 3 hours is an absolute slog fest.
Oh, I bet.
But just having that mental preparedness of...
Well, in a 100-mile, I'm assuming at some point it's going to be a slog fest.
Well, yeah. I mean, eventually, you know, if you have a pacer, you're eventually... You're walking as much as you can, and you're only jogging as much as your pacer can make you.
Yeah.
Right? I mean,
yeah.
And it is just a mental battle of can I run or should I walk or do I just quit? And hopefully that.
So, what I'm getting at is you don't have to go out. If you're doing a 50, you run 40.
No,
you don't do 185.
That would just trash you too much. I mean, you don't think you can't really do
that. Yeah, you don't really. I mean, there's. Certainly some freaks out there that can run ultras every weekend, but they're running them to finish them, or they're running just out of the sheer fun of it, and they're walking a lot of it. But if you have, you know, A goal races, like leading up to 100, I might run 250Ks to prepare for those, but those are like, you know, 10 weeks out. Plenty of time to recover.
Yeah.
And even in those, you're not really racing those. You are just getting through them and working on those nutritional things, what works best for you.
Now, I had another question about the altitude, because I ran at altitude once, and on flat, I was fine. But as soon as I started climbing, like I got a quarter mile in, I was gassed. And I was in decent shape. Like, how do you handle that coming from the Midwest to the mountains, and just how do you like get through that at all?
Yes. I don't know. I haven't figured it out yet.
I ran Rabbit Run a couple of years ago, which is Steamboat.
Yeah.
And it gets up over 12,000. And so it's pretty high.
Yeah.
At Rabbit Ear Pass. And we got out about a week early and did some hiking and got up and tried to acclimate a little bit. But for a flatlander, I don't think there's any way you can really, unless you want to spend weeks on end trying to act.
I got two ideas that you could do.
Oh, boy.
Not do it?
No. Well, no.
Does one of them involve Bojangles?
No. Oh, yeah, Bojangles. I mentioned it. Two things, and you're probably going to laugh at me at this. I don't know if it's legit. But
whatever, go for it, man.
Do your run, just breathe it out your nose.
No, no.
Because then you're putting less air in. Or, I'm serious, hold your breath, right, and run.
Zytopec.
No, because then you're decreasing your oxygen, which is what altitude is,
that's
right?
That's our liability on his recommendations.
That would work. No one,
please do this. Don't do that.
I'm saying if you just breathe out of your nose.
But there was a famous Russian marathoner who would do crazy things like
that.
Yeah,
I know.
He would actually pass
from.
Out. Zytopec, I think is his name.
Emil? But...
He would hold his breath for so long while he ran that's where I got it from. And he also put tires on himself.
Yeah, and that is arcane training methods, and please do not do that.
I think he ran like 10 miles and he would carry his wife on his back.
Those masks that they've been trying to bring out the
altitude mask.
Yeah, those are ridiculous.
I do have an altitude tent. I mean, an altitude machine.
How's that work for you?
I'm gonna be completely honest. I can never really tell if it's gonna work because I cannot force myself to consistently use it because it's annoying. Because you have the tent gets so freaking hot, and then the mask, the sleeping mask, it starts to like dig in at night. And plus, I don't know, because
you're sleeping in a tent and you have to wear a mask?
Well, no.
He does like a different version of the tent.
I don't think I'm using it right.
But, yeah, he's not.
But the biggest thing with the altitude tent that confuses me is when you train in altitude,
the fact
you
have to be in a tent, that's confusing.
All the time, right? When you live in Colorado, you're in altitude all the time.
Well, ideally, I think the most optimal would be to live at altitude and train at sea level. But
right, yeah. but if you have a machine and it's doing it for you, so mm-hmm. what? Let's say you sleep it at night, right? Well, during the day, you're going to lose that, right? And you're starting over at night.
I think you might need to be in an altitude tent like 12 hours a day.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. That's why I don't think it really works.
Well, if you were in it for 12 hours a day, it would work. But
right, but...
That's
to
hard to do. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. And I don't think that you don't actually use a tent, do you? You use like some kind of mask.
I use a mask, yes. Yeah. I tried the tent. It gets too hot.
Yeah.
It's too hot there.
Yeah, I've heard they do get hot.
Dare we ask why you're doing this?
Yeah, he's not even running anything at altitude.
You can just pitch a tent in your room and sleep in it. That's not how it works.
I got it for free because about 2 years ago, I ran.
I can't believe we've never talked about this on the show. It's actually pretty funny.
We can do a whole segment on that.
Yeah, that's okay.
I can be our guest.
I don't feel like you're the expert we need on this, though.
Just disregard everything. Eat Bojangles in a tent. It's like altitude training.
Yeah, there you go.
Any last words on any tips? Last tips for people out there doing ultra marathons or.
No, I think that for me, the beauty of ultramarathoning is it's a whole bunch of little races within a race, and that's kind of cool. If you run a 5K, if you run a 10K, a marathon, to me, that feels like it's all out, and it's sort of one, you're laying it all out there and putting one, where with ultramarathoning, there's a whole bunch of highs and lows, and some stretches are really good, some are not so good, and to be able to kind of fight through that and get to the end is... It's rewarding. It's a lot of fun. So if I would encourage anybody who's thinking about it to try it, because truly, if I can do it, anybody can do it. It's.
I totally agree about that. It is like the feeling you get after an ultra is pretty incredible. Like just knowing that you just accomplished this crazy task. But yeah.
Yeah. What garments do you have, guy? On? I know you got the Phoenix.
I've got the Phoenix. Just I wanted the battery life.
Yeah.
If you put the ultra track on, it'll go forever.
Yeah, I've got the 935. I got it for the battery life, too.
I got the 235.
The 235?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that won't get you through 100.
No, it doesn't.
Unless you run really fast.
645.
It's gotten me through about 100K.
Yeah, that will get you through 100K for sure. Right.
So I think what I would tell someone who's contemplating whether or not they should try one is just do it. Like, go out, not to steal Nike's term, but sign up. It's amazing what you find out about yourself, and you're not probably going to remember a lot of the thoughts you have in the race. I think I've solved a lot of the world's problems on training runs and in a 100-mile race, but then I don't remember them at the end. But you definitely learn so much about yourself that and just about life in general, about how to push through, and things aren't always going to be as bad as what it might seem in that moment. You just learn so much about yourself and how to react to adversity. Like it's completely worth it.
Yeah. It's like therapy.
It's also cool to say, hey, I've run 50 miles. I've run 100 miles in one sitting. You're right. It just freaks people's brains out.
Yeah. You know?
Right.
They just think you're like this god.
Well, I mean, it's a pretty impressive.
It is. Yeah. That's amazing to me.
I still can't believe some of the ultra marathons I've done. Like, how the hell did I get through that? So we're going to plug 361 one more time. They sponsor the show. Do you want to do this one? I think I've done both of them so far.
We like to thank 361 for sponsoring this podcast. If you want a good pair of shoes, we highly suggest go to 361. You can go to your local runners forum here in Indianapolis. We have 7 locations. We all sell them. Or if you have a run specialty store in your area, just go in there and ask them if they sell them. They're pretty much everywhere. Good brand. Me and Jesse like them. And we wouldn't wear them if they weren't good shoes. So really, really like them. So I have not worn my trail shoes yet, but I guess you can just kind of talk about next time.
Yeah, these are pretty awesome. I haven't got on the trails yet. And also, if you want to start a podcast, you can come to Village Recording Studio in Broderpool and see Brian Wheat, the podcast guru, and he can lead you through the process. And just remember, like, if you can keep, if you would please leave some comments maybe or rate us on the show. Like, again, only 5-star ratings. No, nothing below is allowed. Now we're going to get dinged.
And if you guys have any suggestions.
Like us, comment, subscribe, get on our Facebook page. And then we can, if you want to come on the show, heck, just let us know.
Which one of you guys was the one that won the...
Well, Mark Carlson won, and then he gave it to Brad.
Because
they're friends. That was really cool.
Thank you. I've been on the board of Back on My Feet for a while. Mark sat at my table this year, and it's a great organization. So I know you're involved in the young person's
The young
board,
professional
which is super
board,
cool. It's a great organization. So proud to be affiliated.
Yeah, which we're putting on a Spelling Bee fundraiser coming up in June. So if you ever wanted to do a Spelling Bee, check out Eventbrite for the Back on My Feet Spelling Bee fundraiser, which I think would be kind of fun. Blake, you should enter.
You know what? I can't spell. So, funny story.
The altitude tent might
help. It's the altitude tent. But, you know, back in the day, I don't know if elementary schools still do it now, but, you know, back in the day, they used to have spelling bees. No, I know they spell. But do they have spelling bees? I don't know if they still do. Anyways. They would say spell couch, and I kept spelling coach. I could never get couch right. To this day, I just have a hard time spelling couch.
Jesse, thank you for mentioning Mark. He's put a lot of time into Back on My Feet, and he's actually my my pacer. So he showed up at random places unexpectedly.
So you guys know each other really well then.
Yeah.
Thanks, Mark, for getting Brad on the show.
Yeah, thank you. That's awesome.
And thanks, Brad, for coming on the show.
Thanks for having us.
And for all you out there, just remember to keep running on Indy.